Judovic against Gonzalez is our next case this morning. Mr. Kogel.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Mark Kogel. I'm appearing on behalf of the petitioners. Natasha Jedovic, her spouse, Sabria Slakovic, and their children, ranging in ages from 7 to 11, Camila, Jasmine, and Jasmina. We are here to seek the Seventh Circuit's review of the denial of an application for political asylum as well as withholding of removal by the Immigration Court in Chicago, Illinois. That decision was issued in 2003. The standard of review is generally the decision of the Immigration Court must be based on substantial evidence. However, here we have a much more basic question as to the due process that was received by the petitioners during their court hearing on April 1, 2002. In advance of the court hearing on April 1, 2002, the petitioners asked the Immigration Court to allow an expert witness to testify telephonically. At the beginning of the hearing on April 1st, the immigration judge said categorically, I do not allow telephonic testimony. And this was a bit out of customary for the court, which had allowed telephonic testimony prior to this date. The petitioner's expert witness, Dr. Bernd Fischer of the University of Indiana at Fort Wayne, was not allowed to testify during that court proceeding. Not only was the motion for telephonic testimony denied, but a motion for continuance posited by the petitioners was also denied. The immigration court indicated
given the fact that the immigration judge received written evidence from this same witness, what's the problem?
In terms of the evidence, there was no written evidence per se. The Board of Immigration Appeals, as well as the immigration judge,
I thought there was both a pre-hearing outline and a post-hearing narrative statement.
There was a pre-hearing statement, which was a summary of what the expert would testify about. It certainly was not the detailed testimony that that Dr. Fischer would have testified about.
Was there any obstacle to providing a more detailed written statement? You see, I ask this because the Supreme Court said in Richardson against Perales that not only is written testimony from experts adequate, it is in many ways better than oral testimony. You're not dealing with an expert's credibility, and all you need to do is get on paper in some way the expert's statement. Mm-hmm. So if the immigration judge had said, you know, I don't accept experts by phone, indeed I don't accept experts live, give me the expert's affidavit, under Richardson against Perales, that would have been fine.
That would have been fine. There was no pre-hearing indication that the immigration judge would not allow the telephonic testimony. There was no limitation.
Did he have a rule of court saying that he would?
There had been past history before that immigration judge, as well as in NIAM.
It's different from a rule of court. But in any event, look, I'm not really interested in the details about whether somebody was surprised. I'm interested in the question whether there was anything that, as a realistic matter, could be done orally and couldn't be done on paper from an expert of this kind.
Prior to the hearing where there was the expectation
You're not addressing my question. Please address my question.
Could he testify on paper versus testifying telephonically?
Is there anything realistically that he couldn't do on paper that he could have done over the phone?
No. Could he have testified in writing? And the answer is yes. In hindsight, is that what the immigration judge probably would have allowed? Certainly. In this case, post-hearing, we did submit a statement from Dr. Fischer as to exactly what he would testify about if allowed to testify on the record. The immigration judge did not address any of those statements. Did not address any of those the expert's outline of what he would testify about. None of that was addressed in the immigration judge's decision. The immigration judge's decision simply outlined that a CV was posited. The immigration judge never went back and indicated that it had considered the 2003 statement from Dr. Fisher outlining what facts he would testify about in court. The immigration judge acknowledged the CV as a quote-unquote piece of evidence. In point of fact, it's actually his qualifications. So his qualifications we had provided so that the immigration judge could weigh his testimony on behalf of the petitioners, especially as that testimony would have impacted the claim of persecution for both Ms. Jedovich as well as her spouse. Our argument is that the petitioners were not allowed a meaningful opportunity to be heard when their witnesses or when their expert witness was not allowed to testify telephonically. The immigration judge indicated that it was demeanor testimony that he was concerned about. He couldn't see the demeanor of this witness. There was no timeliness objection from the government, neither at the time of trial nor on appeal. Could this have been done in writing? Of course, and perhaps that is, you know, that is an order that can be issued by that judge in all cases in the future. But again, in NIAM, this is the same immigration judge that had handled the Blagojev case. There was past history of allowing expert telephone testimony. There was past history of that, as recognized by the Seventh Circuit. There was an offer of proof. There was an offer of proof that counsel submitted on the record. The offer of proof, there is no way that that offer of proof as outlining every fact that an expert would testify about could possibly be deemed to be adequate and stand in for his testimony. And that's the problem. The potential that that testimony would have or could have changed the outcome in this case, linking the concerns of Ms. Jedovich, the concerns that she had about what she suffered in Montenegro, concerns she had about returning to Montenegro. The petitioner suffered prejudice in that they were not allowed to link up their concerns with an expert witness to establish their claim to political asylum.
Well, what, given the two written statements from the expert, what evidence was not before the immigration judge that would have been before him otherwise?
Country condition reports regarding Serbia and Montenegro as it applies to the petitioners, as it applies to the petitioners. The effect of the draft evasion laws in Serbia and Montenegro. He would have testified about that.
Yeah, but why can't he cover that in his writings?
Pardon, Your Honor?
Look,
I didn't hear the last.
Why couldn't or didn't he cover those things in his writings?
In his CV, which was submitted in advance of trial.
The CV is not testimony. I mean, maybe this is just a repeat of my earlier question. Is there anything that had to be done orally if it was to be done effectively? And I thought you said no. And then later you said there was stuff missing. Well, I don't understand why it's missing if indeed the expert had an opportunity to submit written testimony.
There was an opportunity to do that in advance of trial. There was an expectation that he would be allowed to testify telephonically.
Well,
he was not
the expectation
to.
Was at most unilateral. I mean, it's like a lawyer not coming to oral argument in this court and then saying, well, since on occasion the Seventh Circuit has heard telephonic argument, I just don't have to show up. You're obliged to listen to me by phone, even though I didn't make arrangements for it in advance. I don't think that argument would go very far. If you had what occurred in name, which was a promise by the immigration judge to accept telephonic evidence, then you might have an expectation, but otherwise all one has is a unilateral belief.
I see that my my time, I do want to save some time for rebuttal, and I will address that in my rebuttal, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Kelly.
May it please the Court. I think, Judge Easterbrook, your question is exactly on point, that there are no concrete examples of what this expert could have testified to. We have the Court accepted the offer of proof offered by counsel during the hearing. The pre-hearing statement did outline Dr. Fisher's testimony, and the IJ, in his decision, did consider the expert's opinion. There's nothing concrete to show that something couldn't have been done in writing. In fact, the 2003 writing by Dr. Fisher, some 10 months after the hearing, is simply bullet points. It does not say anything more, nor does petitioner's brief say anything more about what specifically was missing that could have changed the outcome of this case. When you asked what was before the IJ, what was not before the IJ, counsel said the country condition reports. Indeed, they are in the record. He said the draft laws. Indeed, the IJ has discussed the amnesty that was passed. The amnesty law provided much better conditions should the male petitioner return to Montenegro. What counsel didn't point out is the advance notice the IJ had in this case was 2 days, 2 business days notice of this motion for telephonic testimony, which clearly distinguishes this case from Niem. I think the crucial part is there's no prejudice suffered to the petitioners in this case on any of their points. There's nothing specifically pointed to by petitioners that was not allowed that would change the outcome of this case, not in terms of the expert and not in terms of Ms. Jejevic's testimony. If there are no questions, we rest on our briefs.
Thank you, Ms. Gilley. Mr. Kokel, anything further? Not much to rebut.
We do believe that indeed there was prejudice, Your Honor. We believe that there was prejudice in not allowing not only the expert but also Ms. Jedovich as well. In looking at the transcript of that hearing, 54 out of the 58 pages of her testimony was directed by the immigration judge. One of those pages was one of those 4 pages that wasn't directed by the court was where the court was changing from one tape to another. The immigration judge elicited the only information that he wanted to hear at that trial. Ms. Jedovich's testimony was limited to solely what the immigration judge wanted to hear. Counsel was not allowed redirect. The witness was passed for cross-examination before counsel could go back in and ask the petitioner additional questions about her fears of returning to Montenegro. Petitioner Slakovic did testify about being conscripted into the military, forcefully conscripted, and being sent to a camp in preparation for going to war in Kosovo. Going to war in Kosovo, where he was going to be fighting other individuals that are fellow Muslims like he is. The threats or the dogma that was...
have a little difficulty with that. I mean, would you say that, say, some other country would have to give asylum to a Christian from the United States if he were sent to some other country to fight Christians?
No, not at all. Not at all.
But then it sounds like the argument collapses to is that being drafted into the military and being told you might have to fight is itself persecution. And, of course, that's been rejected too many times to count.
Right. Yes, it has. However, in Bagdatowski as well as in Milkovich, there has been a recognition by the Seventh Circuit that when there is a hated ethnic group that is going to be put in harm's way in a military, there are times when threats of violence against those
individuals. We've certainly held that if a Muslim drafted into the Serbian army is stripped of his weapon and put in the front to serve as cannon fodder, that's persecution. But there's no testimony to that effect here.
And that would have been part of the testimony that our expert could have outlined.
I don't see how an expert could testify to that. I understand how Jedovich could testify to that.
Well, not Jedovich, but Slakovic. Mr. Slakovic was the one who was conscripted. But in terms of testifying about that and what he heard before he went AWOL, is he knew that a platoon was going to be getting sent to Kosovo where they were going to be fighting Muslims just like he is. He saw that as a threat to his own personal safety, and he did not stick around to find out if he would be indeed the cannon fodder. That was his expectation. Based on Begzatowski as well as based on Milkovich, our argument is that as a Muslim who was conscripted forcefully and was going to be sent to Kosovo to fight fellow Muslims, that the threats that he perceived while training satisfy the standard in Milkovic and Begshatowski. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. Our next case for argument.